My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 284 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So this is a pretty special episode. I mean, we've had some, every episode is a special episode.
It's all special.
So tonight, we get to share your feedback for episode 413, the finale of Outlander season 4.
This is really the end for us as a podcast, the end of season 4 and the beginning of Droughtlander, while also simultaneously being the beginning of the Fiery Cross read-along.
You know, I totally get Droughtlander. I get it. I get that people miss the show and miss that time or, you know, want the show to last longer, you know, have a... Because it is. It's a long time to wait between seasons. We know this. I get it. I'm not belittling anyone for suffering or feeling like they're suffering or however they handle Droughtlander. For me personally, and I don't know about Summer, but what Droughtlander? There is no rest.
It's not about rest. It's about the shifting of expectations for your day to day in and out. You know what I mean?
But when I can't rest, I can't worry. So that's all I'm saying. But I get what you're saying.
But the things that we do during Droughtlander are different than the things that we do when the season is airing. So it's still Droughtlander. Clearly, your life remains the same because the things that you do don't really change.
I don't get a rest. Correct.
No. Right. I'm not saying that you do. But what I am saying is that the things that we do to prep for the podcast off season are different. So it is a different beast for us than the podcast is a different beast than it is during the season when the episodes are airing. That's all I'm saying. So then I would stand behind my statement of Droughtlander because we are in Droughtlander. While many of your tasks remain exactly the same, there is a shift between when the episodes are airing and when they're not. So that shift, while different for you than I, is still Droughtlander.
Oh, the time exists. The period between seasons is called Droughtlander. There's no denying that. And whether you're a podcaster or not, and like you said, my stuff, like I still have shiznut ton to do, that does not let up as far as like physically doing something. But yeah, the content changes, the aim changes. We still, yeah, and the scope is oddly much wider, but I always feel, I don't want to say pressure, but I always feel, I guess it's the reverse. It's the relaxing of pressure. It's like the letting air out. Like I can always like, I feel like I could exhale, even though you're right. Or like I said, my quote unquote work, our work here, what we do in prepping and all this stuff, it doesn't go away. It changes. But it is. And I, you know, it's so funny. I go through this like twice a year or twice each with each season. So when we start a new book, it's like, oh my gosh. Ah! And by the time we're getting to the end of the book, we're like, oh my God, let's just get done with this. And then the new season starts and we're all yay. By the end of the season, I'm like, oh, I want to get to the next book. I'm gone. You know what I mean?
But think about it. The season airing is kind of like a break from the read-along. And the season
exactly.
ending is a
and
break
And I don't know
from...
what's better. I don't know what's better. I don't know what...
There is no better. It just is. It's just how we roll.
I think for myself, so if I have a big sigh at the end of both of them, like the end of the read-along, I'm like, oh, we get to do something different now. And the end of the season, I'm like, oh, thank God, right? I think my biggest exhale, even though it's a much shorter period of time, is at the end of the the Stars season.
It's a lot. It's a lot. During the season, there's a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
Pressure,
yeah. Well,
for
yeah.
sure.
And then now, since season 3, we do our live after shows and... Now, of course, at the end of this season, it's been super extra. extra, extra because of the US premiere and Canada premiere of Discovery of Witches, which if you haven't checked it out, check it out. We have a sister podcast called the All Souls Podcast at All Souls Pod at the everywheres. At any place you find us with Outlander Pod, you'll find us with the All Souls Podcast. Again, the original and original podcast. First in the space. Hallelujah. That was odd. I don't know why I sang that. But anyway.
You're always weird and odd.
I know. Hallelujah. What is that? Uh-huh. So anyway.
Super odd.
Just by the way, so that added on to Crazy Town. Oh, and then not even getting a freaking week off for Christmas or New Year. Oh my God. That's a little bit like, oh, whatever. They must have had their reasons. Whatever. It's done. But yes, this was like a super extra, extra ending of a season. It was a lot. Thank God we didn't travel. Okay. Yes, we have stuff to get to.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free.
While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits.
Plus, there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level.
The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data, and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections, such as the 100 most popular.
With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest.
Robinhood is giving listeners of the Outlander podcast a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at outlander.robinhood.com. So now we on to.
Oh my God.
Now we're on to the final piece of your feedback, the final opportunity for your feedback for episode 4, season 4. And this is, of course, for episode 413, the finale, Man of Worth. First up is Audrey.
Hi, this is Audrey from Tennessee, a first-time caller. Just want to say I really enjoyed it. I like the way they wrap things up. I do miss the fact that they didn't do the scrubbing of young Ian in the river like they did in the books. I do get why they had him on the gauntlet like Roger did to show how he could complete it where Roger could not. And also, I'm a bit upset that they didn't give Roger 5 minutes to see his son and at least give that baby a name instead of having to wait a year on a name. That is all. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thanks so much, Audrey. Yeah, there are things that we all would have loved to have seen, and it's hard, and I've talked enough about that.
I know you did, but we also have to understand that they also worked with, you know, tribal leaders. So yeah. There could have been things that were in the book that were not 100% copacetic with, you know, reality. So
what do you call it? Authentic. Yeah.
Authenticity. So while we all love the books, we also have to understand that perhaps there was a larger method to the madness behind the adaptation. So yes, would I have loved to have gotten all the things from the book? Absolutely. But I also have to understand that perhaps the things in the book were not authentic or as authentic as they could have been.
Next up is Brittany.
Hello, Ginger and Summer. This is Brittany from New York calling in about episode 413. I will just get right to it. I think that you guys were very generous with your review of how the writers handled the whole Jamie and Claire not being there for Brianna's birth. Because the thing is that, like Ginger said, this had to have been a choice that they made from the outset, long ago. And maybe it can be argued that they were trying for accuracy, but they've done some pretty stupid things in the past. So I feel like that's kind of, I don't know, throwing them a bone or so. Plus, when they left Bree, it really seemed like Claire thought there was a really big chance that she might be able to be back for the birth. And I just feel like we have been robbed of so many of the great moments in Drums of Autumn between Jamie and Brianna. And that's what makes that book so special, is that Jamie finally has all this time with his child who he's never had. And okay, my time's running out, but there you go. That's it. I loved it. I was just mad about that. Bye, guys.
Brittany, I have nothing to say. You already said it.
I mean, I have a few things to say.
I think we have too much to say.
I know, but I think that we can all stand where we are and say they should do this and they should do that. But I feel like perhaps there was a reason. There had to be a reason. Because when Jamie and Claire left and parted with Brianna, they didn't know where that specific tribe lived when they made promises of let's try to get back. So because we found out the episode after they parted ways, that how far they were going to have to journey to find Roger. So I don't think that character-wise it was too far out of the realm of possibility to say that Claire was trying to make it back, because she was trying to make it back. But they didn't discover exactly how far they were going to be traveling until after they'd parted ways. So I don't know.
Next up is Eileen P.
Hi, Ginger and Shimmer. This is Eileen P. from Melville, New York. I absolutely loved the season 4 finale, but I do have some questions. Why would Jamie and Claire leave Roger to travel alone on a large chunk of the Appalachian Trail while he's injured? Couldn't they let him process everything and think things over while traveling together? Now, this isn't just a show issue. This was also in the book. Okay. Now, in the title card of the finale, we see Ottertooth has the opal pendant in the 1960s before going through the stones. How come it didn't burn up? Did he have another gemstone when he went through that served as the TT toll? My theory is that the TT toll is flexible, and it's at least one gemstone per traveler. Now, at the end of the episode, we had Jamie receive Tryon's order. What will Jamie do about this order to kill Murtaugh? Here's my theory. I think Jamie will have Murtaugh shave off his beard and take the alias Duncan Ennis. Jamie will then pretend that he killed Murtaugh, and Duncan can marry Jocasta. Thanks, Ginger and Summer, for your podcasts during season 4. I am looking forward to your read-along of The Fiery Cross.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. It's just she. But she had Eileen addressed a number of things. And I don't think we have the width or breadth right now in this episode to adequately address them all. But she's right. The thing about him being injured that was in the book. So it's kind of it's a very reasonable question. But she's right. It addresses both, so it's not new. And the whole, I am curious about the opal. Can't answer that. It's an interesting theory. I thought going through the stones would destroy any jewel or stone. I don't think it has a number. I think anything that's there is gone.
Yeah, but you have to. But if he shows up and we see him, if in the show lore, not the book lore, if in the show lore, they show him in the 60s with the opal and then he still has it. When he travels back, it's less clear. So we don't have that answer.
It'll be curious to see. Did you mention the Duncan thing yet? I understand that since it was the end of the season and they really did leave us on at an interesting spot, it's very natural to speculate since we have so long. It's very natural to speculate because we normally don't speculate a lot about, most of the discussion is usually talking about what happened, maybe how they might deal with something. But this is, since there was no merchant in the book, this is all off page, all off world. So it's anybody's guess. It's anybody's guess. Next up, Jessica.
Hi, this is Angelica from Los Angeles, California. So my comments are, I'm really disappointed with the lack of development in Jamie's and Rihanna's relationship. I'm a new book reader, and it's my first time watching the season, having read the book previous. And I'm just really disappointed in the lack of moments between Jamie and Brianna. Like the moment when she called him to his lap after she told him she was with child, when he was with her during her delivery of Jemmy. I felt their relationship was much more closer and sweeter, and we kind of missed some of those moments in the last few episodes where they try to rush everything. Other than that, good episode, still love the show, but just wish we had a little bit more of those moments.
I mean, we're kind of hearing the same thing, right? Maybe put in slightly different words. Some are more specific and others like Jessica are more general as far as, you know, as far as what we got or didn't get. So believe me, we hear you. We hear you. Next up, Judy A.
Hi, this is Judy. I'm a longtime listener and a patron and always listen to your show and love it. Ginger and Swimmer, thank you so much for all you do. I have never paid so much attention to musical themes before. This has been so much fun. I wanted to talk about season 4 in general. I love the way it started. Second episode wasn't so good. Then it started getting better and better and better and better. And then down the rabbit hole, just I couldn't handle. And then Blood of My Blood was my favorite episode. I just loved the way Sam was in that episode. I loved the way Sam was in every episode he was in. He was just, his emotions, everything was just wonderful. The episodes got better and better and better. And then the last episode, I was a little disappointed in, especially not having the birth scene that was in the book. I just wanted her to bond with Jamie so badly. And I did love how Ian ended. And that was wonderful. But I just so missed that birthing scene. And it was great talking to you. And I hope I call you again. This has been my first time. And have a happy year. I can't wait to read Fiery Cross with you. Goodbye.
Yay, Judy. Thank you so much. It's so nice to have you. I mean, I know you waited till the end, but we're happy that you called. But I'm glad you liked the music chat, Judy. There's someone coming up who is kind of on the other side and Summer will be happy for. Anyway, Judy, we're so happy that you called in and we are looking forward to have you hopefully be a participator. Participator?
That's not a thing.
Is that a word? We are looking.
It doesn't feel like it is.
It doesn't. We hope you will be a commenter.
I mean,
to talk tonight. We hope you will send in.
Participate, but thank you. Participator sounds like masturbator.
Whoa. Not that kind of show. Well, not that kind of show. We hope that you will take part in our Fiery Cross read along. What is this book called? The fifth book.
The Fiery Cross.
Thank you. Next up is Kathy.
Hi, ladies. This is Kathy from Ringe, New Hampshire. So much to talk about, but since this is the last one for a while, I do have a background question to ask. Hey, Ginger, what's your musical background? I love your musical insight on the background music, but sometimes I feel like I'm back in freshman music theory. Not a criticism. I love the insight. I'm just curious. And, oh, by the way, I can hear Summer's eyeball roll all the way over
rolling.
Here. Rolling. Just like those of us in class who would do the same when the Star Theory student would go on a rant at an off-campus concert. I'm a huge lover of soundtracks and probably have more of that on my iPod than anything else. I keep trying to rewatch each episode so I can hear the different character themes, but to Bear's credit, he weaves the music in so well that it enhances the scene, not take away from it. In other words, it's not obvious, which is just a testament to his talent. I love the episode. Love John and Sam's goodbye scene finally got me with a tear prick. Both are so good. And more of Richard Rankin's best acting, though I do dread next season. Does Roger ever catch a break?
Nope.
And I did finally laugh out loud with Murta and Jocasta on the morning after. Thank you, stars, for throwing those of us in our golden years a bone with the Silver Fox. Even MDK forgot she was blind, I think, shooting that scene. And all I could think was of MDK belting out her, "I never loved a man the way I love you" from The Commitments before she hopped back into that bed. It's on YouTube. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. And the movie, she's terrific. So on to Droughtlander. I'll spend my time catching up on your podcast from the very beginning since I'm a newbie. I'm still trying to find the answer to the meaning of grande. I did figure out Team Shimmer from Savages. Thanks very much. But anyway, thank you so much for keeping us going. And I guess we'll have to wait and see you next time Outlander starts up. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Okay, Kathy. Grande. It will take too long here. Go to the group. Ask us or anyone what grunge is, and either Summer or I will, we promise, will answer you personally. And if you're not part of the group, why aren't you? Please join. It's on Facebook, outlanderpod.com/group. And Summer, I mean, Kathy, I think you had Summer at eye roll, and I think you lost her at tear break.
Seriously.
But she has a fan in you. You have a fan in Summer, put it that way. Anything else, before we go on?
Does she have a fan in me? She has a fan in me because she acknowledges that I eye rolled, but she also was like, "I love how you break down the music." So she lost me there. Because I don't love how you break down the music. I can't really.
Well, it's funny. She's like, I love how Bear does. I try to listen to the themes. I like it when you break it down, Ginger. But she says Bear does it so seamlessly. Well, I would agree with. I do agree with that.
If he really did it seamlessly, you didn't notice.
That's
which
what
is
I'm about
how
to say.
I feel. Because I don't notice. You're hurting yourself with your laugh right now.
Sorry.
It's a lot.
Here's the funny thing is that I may like never shut up about those themes, like, and always mention what I hear. The problem is I, along with the rest of the Outlander fan universe, read his one, granted it was hugely long, one blog post talking about all of season four, which is really all we needed because it had everything in there. But he mentioned, I was shocked, like he mentioned a few of the different things he mentioned was, oh, when I did this and this, but I was like, oh my God, that's exactly what I said. I mean, seriously, like,
dude,
literally.
Could you even hear what you just did? Because there were no words. It just sounded like.
Stop it. Yes, I could because I said it. Anyway, I was like, pinched myself going, I did. That's what I said. That's what I said. That's what I said. Anyway, one of the things. So I may hear things. And so it may not be. It is seamless-ish, but not so seamless that I can't. It doesn't stick out to me. I'm like, oh my God, Roger and Bethy. Oh my God, Declare theme, whatever. However.
Declare?
Stop it.
I think you were going to All Souls with that.
No, not that. That's different. That's a different declare, show, Summer. Huh? Stop it.
I know.
But he said something or he wrote something in his blog post. He's like, oh, you know, we introduced, a lot more. I introduced a lot more, a good number of themes, character themes this season. And he like starts to talk about them or list them. And I was like, got it. And there were like two that he said. I was like, wait, what? So apparently one that sticks out of my brain, not the music, but what he said was Fergus and Marsley have one, which I did not know. He did not mention Ian, so I may have gotten that wrong. But there was another one that he didn't mention that, but he did mention another one. I was like, so I'm going to have to go back. I don't even know when I'll have time, but hopefully it'll be in the season four soundtrack and I'll just wait till then. But yeah, so he definitely had a lot of new stuff in there. Oh my goodness. So thank you so much, Kathy. And next up, we have Linda G.
Hi, Ginger and Summer. Linda G here, San Francisco Bay Area, leaving my feedback for episode 413, Man of Worth. Hands down, Ian. He was absolutely amazing. Yes, there were tear pricks, but I have to admit, I cried so hard with the book version. And how about Jamie's tear prick? It didn't get any better than that. Oh my God, I love this episode. I know lots didn't get the ending that they were expecting, but I really loved it immensely. And Brianna, okay, let me tell you, I am impressed with her childbirth scene. Yes. And Murtaugh, I'm going to have to keep that comment to myself because I think it's a little too X-rated for the podcast. Anyhow, ladies, it pretty much sums up the finale for me. I thought it was fabulous. My daughter and daughter-in-law, we enjoyed it. We rewatched it a couple of times. Everything. It was great. So, as always, I can't wait until season 5. Love you, ladies. I will be following along your read-along with the Fiery Cross because I am stuck on chapter 5. Bye.
You are not stuck, Linda. You are waiting for us. How's that? That was pretty good, right, Sam? The universe did not let you get ahead of us too much. So, you're perfect. You're perfectly on time, whatever.
I mean, I ain't judging anybody. Fiery Cross was real hard to read the first time.
There's a lot of people with a lot of opinions. And we hope to make this the most fun you've ever had reading this book. If you, like a lot of other fans, have had a hard time getting through it, we want to make it great for you. That sounded really odd.
No, but we're just supporting. We're supporting you in waiting for us.
Oh, yes. And I do support that. You spend a third of your life in sheets. It's about time for a bedding upgrade. Brooklyn and Sheets offer the incredible feeling of five-star hotel sheets. That feeling shouldn't be so difficult and expensive to get at home.
Our friends have literally been raving about these sheets. Brooklinen has been named the winner of the best of online bedding category by Good Housekeeping. Raving reviews have come from Business Insider, Apartment Therapy, and Men's Health.
Brooklinen has over 30,000 five-star reviews, more than any other online bedding company. They've got 500,000 happy sleepers and counting.
We've had the opportunity to try Brooklinen's sheets ourselves, and I can't argue with that comparison. I know. I get, to be honest, I only own one set of Brooklinen sheets, and I'm kind of sad about it because when I go to do my laundry, I get sad because when I'm washing my Brooklinen sheets, instead of, I guess this is my own personal thing, because I can't guarantee that I'm going to have my laundry done in one day. So I switch out my Brooklinens for my non-Brooklinen sheets, and I get a little sad while I wait for my Brooklinen sheets to be done. So my non-Brooklinen sheet weeks are my sad weeks, and I get excited when it's time to switch back. So they are just as amazing as all of the online reviews state that they are.
As Summer, I also only have one complete set of sheets, pillow covers, duvet cover, all that. But when it comes for Brooklinen's turn in the rotation, I sheets are flat on a bed, right? Like you can't curl up in them unless they're like on the floor and not like spread out. Like if you have a fitted sheet.
I've tried to crawl into my duvet.
Well, I do crawl into the bed, but
into my duvet.
Oh, into your duvet.
Into my duvet.
Oh gosh. Well, if I could, I would just like nothing more than to wrap myself in them because they are so comfy. And color-wise, they have, whether it's colors or patterns, they have something that will go work with you. I chose all white because I have varying collections or varying sets, but everything I have has white in it and in some capacity. So it will literally go with anything that I have and I can mix and match. You got the gray pinstripe, right?
I did. And they go because my bedroom is predominantly charcoal in color. So they go amazingly with the things that are already there. So I guarantee you, they are 100% coordinatable with whatever you have going on in your bedroom right now. Brooklinen was founded in early 2014, and their mission was to make five-star hotel quality sheets more affordable and easy to order.
Brooklinen was the first DTC bedding company, meaning they worked directly with manufacturers and directly with customers. No middlemen. Just great product and service.
My Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. Now it's time for your upgrade. Brooklinen.com is giving an exclusive offer to just our listeners. Get $20 off and free shipping when you use promo code Outlander at Brooklinen.com.
Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all their sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use promo code Outlander at Brooklinen.com. That's Brooklinen.com. Promo code Outlander.
Brooklinen. These really are the best sheets ever.
Next up, Michael M.
Howdy, Ginger. Howdy, Summer. And howdy, fellow members of Team Shimmer. This is Michael from Shawnee, Kansas, with my feedback for Outlander Episode 413, the final show of Season 4. The biggest and really only surprise for me this episode was Mercosta. Now, when we saw Murtaugh in Ardsmuir along with Jamie back in Season 3, I, like a lot of other book readers, shipped Mercosta myself. I think it was during the last Droughtlander that the show said Murtaugh would not take on a certain role in the show, and I succumbed to this revelation. When we met Murtaugh again, I could see that the Mercosta I had envisioned would be difficult. As it turns out, that did not prevent the two from
do a little dance, make a little love, get down tonight.
Time and distance. So, on Google Maps, I calculated how long it would take to walk from Fayetteville, North Carolina to Albany, New York. Google's answer was 221 hours. Divide that by 8 hours of progress a day, and that's just shy of 28 days. Note, this route is paved, has bridges, no steep inclines, and I would wager at least a dozen or more Taco Bells along the way. Now take into consideration the lack of roads, bridges, and Taco Bells, and also throw in the distortion effects of the time-traveling stones, then the journey will take some time. So after parting company with Jamie and Claire, and in order to reunite with Bree, Roger certainly had a
long and winding road.
Michael M., honestly, we're going to have to like cut stuff short because we can't do like other people's music on our show.
We don't have copyright.
Exactly. Now, we had a very, very sweet gentleman named Peter W. call in, and he called three times. It was like he called in once. I think he wanted to finish it up the next time, and then he called in because he forgot something. But it's just very sweet. So thank you so much, Peter. I'm going to play him. It's very cool, Summer.
My name is Peter. I'm calling from Melbourne, Australia. Firstly, I'd like to say I'm a blind person, and I have read all the entire series from book 1 to 8 in Braille. It's available in Australia in Braille, as I'm sure it is in America as well. And I've read most of the novellas on Audible. So, with that background, I'd just like to say how pleased I was that Tony Graffia left us in a safe place at the end of the season. I was so scared that we might have Jamie left in the village, or Roger not being able to get to come back with them, or any possibility. But it was so beautifully done at the end. You know, obviously you have to skip over a lot of events, but you know it doesn't matter. Congratulations to Tony Graffia and indeed all the staff who and the producers who produced this series. And also, Suma, I'd like to congratulate you and your partner on this lovely podcast that you produce for us week after week. It's just a magnificent production, and thank you so much. My wife devotedly describes to me what goes on in the series. I would never, obviously, there has to be a lack of dialogue from time to time. And that can't be helped. But she's my eyes telling me what happens. And, of course, we repeat it a couple of times later, and she gets more out of it and tells me more. Good. Thank you for both of you for this wonderful podcast. See you later.
And then Peter had something he wanted to follow up with.
Hello, it's Peter back again from Melbourne, Australia, for the last time. I forgot to mention that my wife's name is Barbara, and I'm terribly sorry about that. That was just so stupid of me. And so, Ginger and Suma, congratulations. You just keep on producing the goods. It's a wonderful work that you do, and I look forward to the read-along for book 5. See you later.
I love that he called in to tell us his wife's name.
I know.
But what I love that he called us the second time to tell us that his wife describes it for him, because they do have descriptive services for blind people. And I, in my mind, when he said he was blind, I was like, ooh, I wonder what the descriptive services do, you know, how they describe it. But I love even more that it's a group effort, like a group activity for him and his wife. I love that.
Yeah. And I love that. And then, of course, we wouldn't know that unless you'd called in. So thank you so much, Peter, for calling in. And God bless you and your wife. That is amazing how you guys can. I love it that you eat blind or no. I'm glad you guys share Outlander. That just rocks my world. And the fact that she is your eyes for parts of the show where the dialogue is lacking, or where, you know, she helps describe things even when there is dialogue. Oh, my goodness. What a relationship. And then thirdly, or least important, but it makes me, obviously, it's super thrilling to me, at least, that I'm so happy that you listened to our show. Obviously, you wouldn't be calling in unless you knew about it. But thank you so much for listening. And you really made probably made my month. Definitely my day is at the end of the day, definitely the week, but probably the month. So it's just we get some very nice comments, calls, emails, messages, all, you know, different media, and many positive comments and people thanking us for the show, saying they like the show, sometimes saying what they wish we had done or hadn't done or said. But it really makes me very happy. I'm so thank you. I'm just babbling now. Thank you so much, Peter. It really means a lot to me that you called in. And last but not least, Susanna M.
Hello, everyone. This is Susanna from Lisbon, Portugal. This time, I only have one comment about the episode. I missed the bonding time between all the characters. Well, Jocasta and Myrta bonded enough, but that wasn't in the book. Now, I want to talk about your show. Even though I'm Portuguese, I believe I understand a lot of English. But you girls can still make me go to the dictionary. I thought I only needed to do that when reading herself. This season, I've learned from you the word swag, which is great for Bonnet. This last episode, I felt frustrated with the abbreviations used. I believe POV means point of view, but I have no idea what BA means. Is it some curse word or something? And what about the word smug that Summer said? I had to write it phonetically and couldn't find the word. Now, about the music. You know, I don't hear it, but I already recognize Claire and Jamie's theme and the Ridge theme. Because, Ginger, you're always singing it. Could you please do the same with the others so I can start recognizing them?
Oh, my God. Please don't.
Bye-bye. Don't forget to tell me what smug means. Okay?
Okay. Okay. So the thing that's going to be confusing is that smug is spelled S-M-U-G, which probably is not how you phonetically would have spelled it. So let me find a dictionary definition of smug. Smug, having or showing an excessive pride in oneself or one's achievements. Is that, do you think, good?
I think so. And Susanna, B-A, doesn't surprise me you wouldn't know it. And it doesn't surprise me that it would necessarily not be easy to find, which sounds really weird, I guess. But yeah, so B-A, and it's not... It's known, but maybe it's like a little old school. I don't know. Is that from the 80s or something? I don't know. It's not the most common thing, but yeah, it means badass. Like it's like a long, English slang. It's like, he's cool. That's awesome. He's a bad mofo, mother effer, right?
That Why kind are you of giving her more things she doesn't recognize?
Bad. Well, they're not acronyms.
Mofo? Anyway,
that's why I said mother effer. So, now we've done some musical education, some English education. Oh my gosh, we haven't even gotten to chapter one yet. Okay, are you ready?
Is it time?
It is time. Oh, no. Sorry. My singing just reminded me of my singing. Susanna. We can do, I have to prep for it, but I will go through Bear's.
Please don't.
Not on our show. I will go through Bear's blog and I will notate for myself all the themes that he's identified and the ones that I don't even know. Because there are a few that I, like, yeah, I couldn't sing to you or couldn't hum to you. Marsley and Fergus, I didn't know they had one. So I will go learn those really well or even better. And I'm happy to do a live in the group.
No.
Without Summer, you don't need to be there.
Okay, good.
Why do you think I'd ask you to be there for something you hate?
Because you hate me. You want to punish me?
I don't hate you.
You want to punish me?
Oh, Summer. Anyway, I'm happy to do that. And
why don't you just like point her to the soundtrack and then she can just listen to all the music?
Or actually, you know, that's not a bad idea. I will listen to it. Okay, I'll look at his blog and his soundtrack. I don't have Spotify Premium, but that's the thing is you have to have Spotify Premium to be able to play individual things, but the soundtracks are all on Spotify. So what I can do is I can identify what they are, and then if you have premium, you can play them individually. I don't know about Amazon Music. I don't have that. I have whatever you get with Prime. But anyway, I'm very happy to share a post in the group that lists the themes and links to. I can't link. I don't think I can link to individual files, but I can link. No, you know what we can do? If I'm not mistaken, because we can do it for our show. It's an integration between Spotify and Instagram. You can find whether it's an episode of our show or a piece of music. I think you can link. It might just be podcast. Anyway, we'll figure out a way, either a live or a post in the group. I am happy to do my best to connect those two, to give you an audio of something, whether it's me humming along or if I can somehow link to something online or on Spotify, whatever. Yeah, we'll look at that. That's a great idea. Okay, Summer, take it away.
Well, as we're getting ready to embark upon the fiery cross read-along, the thing that I'm most excited about this week is to play for you, our listeners, our new fiery cross read-along music. To our read-along. This week, we will begin our The Fiery Cross read-along.
It's so weird to say that.
I know. It's got the word the, and it's weird.
Our the. Well, let's just take out our. Just say the.
Okay. We're going to begin The Fiery Cross read-along with part one. Are you going to do the prologue? Do you have anything to say about the prologue?
I typed it out.
Are you going to talk about it or?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about
it. All right, then start with that.
I backwards. Ugh. Okay, so it's actually called, and I didn't know this earlier, actually called in the table of contents, it's called an epigraph, which I did not know. Okay, quote, "I have lived through war and lost much. I know what's worth the fight and what is not. Honor and courage are matters of the bone, and what a man will kill for, he will sometimes die for, too. And that, O kinsman, is why a woman has broad hips. That bony basin will harbor a man and his child alike. A man's life springs from his woman's bones, and in her blood is his honor christened. For the sake of love alone would I walk through fire again." Unquote. I mean, wow. Oof. There's so many things we can take from this that we can't say because it's at the beginning of the book. but looking back, what can we briefly pull from that, Sam?
Words.
Or is there any? Huh?
Words.
There's a lot of them. Burns. I don't know. I didn't know that. I got to check something. No. Yes, words. On its... Okay, since Diana did not quote anyone or cite anything, I'm guessing those are Diana's words. So if they are Diana's words, whose words do you think they are? Are they Jamie's? Are they Claire's?
Let me read it again. Usually, it's Claire. But this one does not strike me as Claire.
I think it could be Claire or Jamie. The reason I'm leaning toward Jamie is because as far as living through war, losing much, whether I do it again for love, blah, 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 that could be either. But the reason I lean toward Jamie is because it sounds more like his speech, like, oh, kinsman, like I can't, that's not something Claire would say. But also the fact that he's describing a woman's hips and how it will harbor a man and I almost said seed. Well, that too. But no, a man and his child, and in her blood his honor is christened. It's all, even though he's describing a woman, he's talking about what happens to a man, right? Or where a man's life springs from, where how a man's honor is christened in her blood. So it sounds very kind of from a male POV. So I'm leaning toward Jamie as well. Let us know, you guys. We had two contributors this week. Neither of them mentioned the epigraph, which is totally fine because that's before the book starts. But I'm curious. What do you guys think?
All right. Well, we will move along to part one, entitled In
Media Res.
Media Res. And chapter one, this is much easier to say. Happy the bride the sun shines on.
I don't think we get a lot of French this book.
Oh, God, I hope not.
Summer. First of all, about the title, Eileen P. writes, the chapter title is Happy the Bride, the Sun Shines On. Yet when the chapter begins, it is raining. Does this mean it will stop raining and the sun will shine during a wedding? If so, it would portend happiness. However, what if it rains on your wedding day? Superstition says it's bad luck. You know who believes in superstitions? Jamie. Taking a page from his book, I would say the rain could put a damper on someone's wedding. Okay. We are back with our beloved Outlander book family at Mount Helicon, royal colony of North Carolina, late October 1770.
Now, for anyone who is unsure as to where we left off,
it was in the October last book, 1770.
In the last book, they were also on Mount Helicon. And I believe some of the last dialogue from the book was, tell them the Mackenzies of whatever, the Mackenzies are here.
Yeah, and later in this chapter, we learn that the gathering was about a week. And so if this is the last day of the gathering and it's late October, I'm saying that the book four ended in late October. That's what I'm saying. Unless it was the beginning, it may have been a week earlier than October, but it was still October, October 1770. My question is, and I forget, and I know we do our best not to bring things into, like, from the show into here, but I'm curious, even though it's been a week, where did, or approximately what year? Was it also 1770 or was it 1771? In the book, in the show when they ended season four. I hope to God it was 1770 because, oh, dude, this whole time thing is doing my head in. Okay, let's keep it separate. I can't do this. Okay. So chapter one, let's be honest. This chapter starts with Frank who? Claire wakes up with the feel of her first husband's kiss on her lips. But what's even more interesting is she asks herself to keep the feeling or to hide it.
I was so confused reading this.
Took a second. Took me like four times to get through that. Like, what is she doing?
That, and then also, because they switched everything around in the show, I was confused as to why she had just gotten the gold ring back. And I was like, but she had the gold ring the whole time. And then I was like, no, she didn't, Summer.
I know.
No, she didn't. It put me out of place for a minute, and I had to read it. I didn't read it. Davina read it to me, but I had to listen to it a couple of times to get back into that space of, oh, no. In the book, it was the gold ring that was taken.
Well, it was, but she had known about it for quite a while.
Yeah, but she hadn't been wearing it.
No, she put it down when they had that big fight after Roger was sold off. She's holding it and she puts it down, and then that's when that was similar to the show. But anyway, yeah. So I think has she been carrying it and just put it on, or was someone else carrying it and gave it to her at the gathering? I forget.
She made it sound like they had been recently reunited.
Yeah, so I'm thinking someone else.
But recent is subjective, so it could have been that she didn't have it for a year and then has been wearing it for a month. You don't know.
Well, I think we do know. If we go back to, we know that book four ends October 1770. Book five begins late October 1770. So there's not a lot of time gone between the two books.
Yeah, but she didn't just put it on.
That's what I'm trying to say.
At the end of the last book, she could have been wearing it for the last month in the book timeline.
That's what I'm trying to say. We may not get a date on the page or in the chapter of when she actually gets it and puts it back on. But I believe, and this could be completely wrong, because again, it's been a little while since I've visited the end of book four. It's possible that she puts it back on at the gathering, not that day, because she's not wearing it. She doesn't wear it right away once she gets it from Bree. She holds on to it, but doesn't wear it. Yeah, I don't know. In order to get that answer, we'd have to go look it up, which we're not going to do right now. So let's go forward. But yeah, the whole Frank, it was a little confusing to me too. So Jamie and Claire are in a tent and they're waking up. And this is a bit of a turnabout from book one, and or a, I wouldn't say a juxtaposition, but like a recall. Quote, Jamie stirred and murmured in his sleep. Perhaps the ghost's passing had disturbed him. Unquote. So whereas if you don't know what I'm talking about, in book one, first chapter or second, in the first two chapters, when Claire and Frank are on their second honeymoon in Inverness at Mrs. Baird's, and Frank is coming back to the B&B, and as he's walking in the rain toward the B&B, he sees a Highlander in garb standing there watching Claire brushing her hair in the window. And he stops, but when the ghost turns around, he walks past him. But that's exactly what I thought of when we have this line here. Jamie stirred and murmured in his sleep. Perhaps the ghost's passing had disturbed him. So almost like again, like a replacement or like a recall, not a recall, like a replay, but you know, like
a callback.
Exactly. A callback to a ghost. But this time the ghost, we flipped. So Claire even tells Frank to go away. She senses the presence of his ghost, though. And in her mind, she's imagining him saying, shouldn't I come to see her married? Of course, meaning Brianna. It's very emotional because regardless of their past, she does think, and she says it later on in the chapter, she does think that she's like, you know what? Okay, when they get married, I'll touch my ring or I'll have a thought of him and I will, you know, I'll think of him as she's getting married because I'll think of him seeing her through my eyes because she would want both of her fathers here. So they're preparing this last day of the gathering for Roger and Bree's wedding. Jocasta and a few more and a few other things. Jocasta would be handling the food and the drink, and they were at the largest gathering of Scottish Highlanders in the colonies, not just in North Carolina, in all of the colonies. So guests weren't a problem either. Bree would also be getting a new dress from Jocasta, dark blue wool. We get a necessary rehashing of Bree and Roger's relationship and Jem's parentage, or us not knowing of the parentage, and Roger's acceptance of him, Jem, as his own.
And this is part of what I love about Diana Gabaldone and why I was able to pick up with book four and still understand what was happening.
Yes, because she does this with every book.
Not like hit you over the head with it or bore you to tears with it, but just enough. And plus, we also all understand that usually it takes 4 to 5 years for her to write a book. So that being said, not everyone does a full reread before the new book comes out. So what this does is it fills in any of the gaps that may have been created by 4 years having passed.
So we get that necessary rehashing of Bree and Roger and Jem's parentage and of Roger's acceptance of him as his own without knowing for sure that he was his. Jamie's had a bad dream. It was a reenactment of one of a historical anecdote told by Roger the night before. And that was when Irish kings were crowned, they were said to copulate with a white mare in front of all the peoples. And Jamie, in his dream, was in charge of the horse.
Oh, Lord.
And then it all went sideways. Jamie was trying to convince, the horse was black and not white, and he was trying to convince the people that, yes, a black mare would do just fine. And he's like, look, I'll show you.
No.
And he didn't get there. Quote, just when I was getting ready to make myself king of Ireland, that's when I woke. Dude, DGs. Diana's humor is redonk. I love it.
Pretty standard for me, though. I've always had the sex dreams that fade to candlelight. Like,
oh, law.
Meaning they aren't sex dreams. Right? So right when you think something good's going to happen, it's like you fade off and you look at a fireplace.
Yeah, but if I was about to copulate with a horse, I'd be happy to wake up.
Or you wake up. Like you slowly come to consciousness when you want to be getting down to business.
I don't want to get down to business with a horse. I don't think Jamie did either.
Nobody wants to get down to business with a horse, except for maybe another horse. Except I'm not saying that.
Elizabeth Kay writes, I love the opening of this chapter. It's a very comfortable way to share a story for me, getting to wake up with our main character. I've never really been someone who needs to be dropped into the action right in the first sentence, so it's nice to just have that sense of getting the day a story started with Claire in a very organic way. The time she needs in order to wake up is the time I need in order to get back into the story of Outlander. That's funny. Continuing, Jamie's dream cracks me up every time. I don't know if I would ever have wanted to be a ruler of Ireland badly enough to go through with that particular ritual. The beginning of his dream made me think that Jamie has something he's trying to mentally work through in his waking life. I know that when something is in life is frustrating me, I often have dreams that involve needing to complete a task and being unable to, no matter what I try, because something goes wrong every single time and I just can't get the task done.
Just can't get the horse to stand still.
And Eileen P. writes, Frank? What is Frank doing in Claire's dream? What is Frank doing kissing Claire in Claire's
dream? She just got the ring back.
I get that it's Bree's wedding day, so maybe Claire would be thinking of Frank, the man who raised Bree. But that doesn't mean kissing needs to be involved in the dream. Or was it a dream? Maybe Claire is being visited by Frank's ghosts. I have one thing to say about that. Behave, Frank's ghost. Behave. If it's not bad enough that Claire is dreaming of Frank or seeing his ghost, Jamie is dreaming about having sex with a horse. I understand that Jamie Fraser's stubbornness is shown here when he insists the black horse is better than the white horse in the dream. Why does he have to attempt to copulate with the black dream horse? Why does Claire kiss ghost Frank? The sun is not shining on this wedding day and odd things are already happening. I think it's interesting that in his dream, Jamie is handling the horse for the king. Didn't Jamie take care of the horses when he was at Hellwater? Maybe the attempt at copulating with the black horse has something to do with Geneva. Hey, we have Claire kissing someone she doesn't want to be kissing. Now there's Jamie's dream where he needs to prove that he can copulate with the black horse. Perhaps it points to dominating Geneva, someone he didn't want to have sex with. Like Jamie, Roger is a storyteller and he sure picked a good one. And then Eileen P. shared a link with some information about the coronation ceremony for Kings of Ireland. Yeah, I did not think about Geneva. That's a lot. I didn't come out. Did you think of Geneva some?
No. To be frank, I listened to this chapter today and I do not recall Davina telling me about Jamie trying to have sex with a horse.
Are you kidding me?
I must have been doing work through that section.
So when I mentioned it,
everyone keeps mentioning it. I'm going, what?
They did what? Huh?
How did I miss the horse sex? Oh, Lord.
How? That's nothing I would miss.
Right? In the books, Claire has just gotten back her gold ring the night before, Frank's ring. Instead of getting a morning bonk, however, Jamie tells Claire to get up as there are soldiers down by the creek. It was a detachment of the 67th Highland Regiment. Lieutenant Archibald Hayes comes forward. He reads a proclamation of Governor Tryon's, and we find out that there was an event at Hillsborough on September 24th to 25th. Some people had attacked and beaten several others during the sitting of a Superior Court of Justice, quote, drinking damnation to their lawful sovereign King George and success to the pretender, unquote. In order to bring those people to justice, Tryon asks people to basically find out who was involved and bring them to him by November 30th. The 400 Scots, mean the people at the gathering, mostly and understandably remain silent. Hayes says that anyone who wants to bring him info can trust him to keep it. He's like, I'm here all day. That's my tent down there. Jamie's thinking about Archie. The proclamation would be read in towns and villages throughout the entire colony. Rather than relying on local magistrates or officials to take it around, Governor Tryon had sent Hayes. We learn more about Hayes. Hayes was at Culloden at the age of 12. He is with his father who had died. He had been wounded, captured, sent south, and then joined the army rather than be transported. The night before, at the gathering, he had shared the fire with many, going around the camp and getting to know people. No English officer would have had hope of communicating this message and have hope of compliance. But Hayes and his men just might. Elizabeth Kay writes, Governor Tryon's message, whatever else I might feel about the man, he is clearly not stupid. I think Claire is absolutely spot on when she said that had an English officer and company been sent, they would have had no chance of anyone coming forward with this information. With the Highland Regiment, led by a man who was actually present at Culloden, at least there's a chance someone would be willing to come forward. It wouldn't feel like as much like a betrayal. And Eileen P. writes, we see an alternative result of fighting at Culloden. Archibald Hayes was captured at age 12 and sent south. He was given the choice of transportation or joining the army. He chose the army. Now the governor is using the Scots and his army to influence the Scots in North Carolina. Well, you work with what you have, right, Sam? If he knows that he has Archibald Hayes and he fought at Culloden and he would be the best person to send to speak to these people, he was smart. Claire knows of at least a dozen men who had taken part in the Hillsborough riots. And she's not happy that Jamie thinks she might inadvertently give someone away. But, he says, quote, you know how you are, Sassenach. Anyone who sees your face kens just what you think. Unquote. So now that Roger and Bree are safely reunited and the gathering is on, Diana hits us on the head in chapter one, bringing the conflict, of course. Jamie doesn't think Hayes expects people to give others up. And by the way, this is the last day of the gathering. Claire is wondering if some people would be giving others up, giving them away. During the gathering, people had boasted. People had been boasting over the last week about their involvement in the riots. And then Jamie says, happy the bride the sun shines on, happy the corpse the rain falls on. And Claire's like, yeah, that's nice. What'd you think about that saying, Sam?
The corpse thing? I thought it was happy the bride the sun shines upon. That's not morbid, but it turns real dark real fast when he continued. Yeah. So by itself, it's not a morbid thing, but then, you know, collectively, it's not great.
As they walk to where they need to be, where they're going, Claire mentally is planning their breakfast, and Jamie makes a grab for her booty and finds out she's got no petticoat on. What the heck happened? And she's like, you don't want to know. And then this little scoundrel, like little boy, is running around in crazy town, and it's Germain. He has a newborn sister, wee Joni, and Fergus, Germain's father, is chasing him, and Germain, ever the acrobat, falls, rolls, and ends up in a creek. One of the soldiers fishes him out. Bree takes wee Joni from Marsali and tells her to go look after Germain. Okay. Elizabeth K. writes, all right, everyone, pay particular attention to this moment with Germain. It tells you everything you need to know about him for the entire rest of the series, or at least until book 8. A bundle of energy, constantly on the move, always into something, often in trouble, yet completely lovable. I have adored Germain ever since his arrival. I don't know that I would want to raise a Germain, but I love reading about him. Summer, would you want to raise a Germain?
No.
I think I'd get my tubes tied if I gave birth to a Germain.
They didn't really have that option.
No more. Oh, I didn't say they did. I'm saying that's what I would think about doing. And Jamie has neither coat nor plaid on. Claire takes Jemmy from Bree so Bree can take.
It was like the baby shuffle.
I know it was like the whole episode. Gosh, the whole chapter. So Jamie had given his coat to Roger for their wedding so he didn't look like a vagabond or whatever word he used. So honestly, Summer, I did not remember this line at all. I didn't remember it. And the reason I bring it up is there's a lot of stuff I don't remember if it's been a while since, you know, I read it. But this line, and I'm just going to leave it there. You'll know what I'm getting at. If you read it before, you will. Quote, Roger was shaving when the drum started up. He nearly cut his throat, unquote. So yeah, that stood out to me. And that's all I'm going to say. So the front of his coat was covered in blood. And so Jamie gave him his. Jamie sent him Roger to chat with Father Donahue. And we learned that Jamie had been surprised to learn that Roger wasn't Catholic. So he's coming back from his talk with the priest. So Roger appears in a Mackenzie tartan and plaid, Jamie's good coat and waistcoat. And as they're walking together, poor Claire has a hot flash. And Jamie takes Jem from her. So Roger's talk with the priest went well. And he says, quote, he satisfies I'm not the Antichrist. That's good. And, quote, the revelation that his son-in-law was Presbyterian and had no intention of converting had occasioned some small comment, unquote. Now, Roger had actually wanted to say something earlier, but Bree had told him to keep quiet. Eileen P. writes, when do you tell your Catholic father that your fiancé is not Catholic? On your wedding day. Smart move, Brianna. You really are a Mackenzie.
But after it's too late.
Yeah, exactly. So Roger and Jamie are chatting. Duncan Innes had also been at Hillsborough during the riots.
Should we change his name officially from like Duncan to like Durta?
No. This is a book.
Or like
we don't make
like Munkin.
Summer. No, Munkin. No.
I just want the readers at home to play along.
But we're not talking about the show.
I know, but everyone's gonna be so confused.
Only for a few weeks, and then we'll be good. Okay. It'll get easier once we're in it. And yes, Duncan is one of the ones who is also meant to be wed this day. The priest has said they can all marry in the tent because of the weather. And Bree's fine with that. And Roger's like, you know, I know this is probably not what you thought when you were growing up about your wedding day. Not what you imagined when you were a little girl. And she says, I like the first one just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Making a side eye, and she's like, okay, I won't say anything more. And Roger was happy. He was, I won't say he was smug, but He read it.
Maybe
he
you like, shouldn't, because that's not a word that's easy to look up if you don't know how to spell it.
He was pleased. But she didn't go any further because, yeah, Jamie was there. And Hayes wants to chat with Jamie. Jamie's like, yeah, I'm busy. I have other things to attend to. Hayes has asked for Farquhar Campbell. Oh, sorry. Someone comes up. I think it's his corporal. Someone comes up to Jamie and says that Hayes would like to talk to you. Jamie's like, yeah, I got things to do. Sorry about that. And he is told, well, Hayes has asked for Farquhar Campbell, Andrew McNeil, Gerald Forbes, Duncan Innes, and Randall Lillywhite. And these are all names we're familiar with. Jamie's like, okay, I'll come. I'll come as soon as it's convenient. And Jamie plans for it not to be convenient for as long as he can help it. And then Duncan appears. He's all dressed for the wedding. Jamie hands Jem back to Claire. He's got a doo-doo or he's gone doo-doo. Claire's like, thanks. And she goes to take care of him. She's got his diaper off, his clout off. And Jamie comes over standing across the stream or creek, standing against the tree. He's looking at her as she is, getting ready to change the diaper. And she asks him to rinse out the dirty clout. Quote, with three babies all in clouts, and weather too damp to dry anything proper.
Did you call it a clout on purpose when you then 5 seconds later called it a clout?
Well, I read the word clout, but I have heard clout as well.
I have never heard clout. You just made that up.
I did it. I promise you. Googled it.
It's not real.
Not now.
It's spelled the same, but it's pronounced clout.
Okay, maybe it's clout, but then in Scots, or the accent, they'd say clout.
No.
Clout.
No.
I never heard of clout.
You've never heard of clout?
No, I've heard of clout. I'm saying, yeah, I've never heard of
clout is not a thing, and you've said it three times now.
I've never heard of clout, like a Scots accent for saying clout. Anyway, with three babies all in clouts and weather too damp to dry anything properly, they were short of clean bits. So they had washed everything they had, and it wasn't drying because it was so humid and wet. And so Claire had been using her nice petticoat and ripping pieces off so that they could keep the babies in clean clouts. And they were also using pins that Roger and Bree had made. So Bree designed them. Roger had started whittling or carving up getting the wood small. And then Bree had carved like a frog's face or something on it. But she had put it together with glue and all these things. But it was Bree's design. Elizabeth K. writes, side note that feels very weird to talk about concerning Claire wondering if baby Jemmy wasn't a bit precocious. And what Elizabeth is referring to is when Claire looks up and sees Jamie across the creek while she's working with Wee Jem. She has her hand put over I think Diana called it the danger zone, something like that, where, of course, his Wee Willie was. Speaking of Willie, his Wee Willie, to cover it up so she didn't get peed on. And Elizabeth, and she asks or mentions the word precocious. So Elizabeth's quoting that. And she says, and Jamie assuring her that it's completely normal, at least for Scottish lads. Having worked in infant rooms in several daycares for several years, over which time I changed hundreds, if not thousands of diapers, I can assure you that it is not just Scottish lads. And as far as what it is a stiff mini willy. Basically. Did you just snort?
No.
What did you do?
I said, oh, it's not really a snort.
You exhaled. Eileen P. writes, why would you hang diapers out in the rain to dry? Why wouldn't you hang them in the shelter of your tent?
They didn't sound like they had a tent.
Well, it didn't sound like they were changing the diaper near their tent. It was in the family area. Like,
they were also hiding from that dude down at the river.
But they didn't hide until just right then. And all the laundry was already hanging. So they've been hanging stuff all week. Eileen writes, I love this line, quote, about Jamie. Claire says this about Jamie. Quote, you could live naked on an ice floe, Jamie Fraser, and melt it. Unquote. And finally, Bree has designed the safety pins for Jemmy's diapers. She's putting her education at MIT to good use. Absolutely.
I don't think they had a class on that at MIT.
On diapers? On diapers.
No, on diaper pins.
Ding. Duncan will wait to talk to Hayes. The plan is he'll be able to honestly say that there is no man present at the gathering who'd taken part in the riots, because by the time he's going to make himself scarce, and by the time he does speak with Hayes, he'll be able to honestly say that no one is there who took place in the riots, because by nightfall, they'd be gone. They're going to leave. Again, in the book, and only so far, we are reminded that the biggest reason Tryon has Jaime potentially over a barrel is that land grants can only be made to Protestants. And of course, Jaime is Catholic. And their very small numbers, the Catholics, mean that there was little to no organization of themselves. As a matter of fact, there were no churches or priests in the colony. Father Donahue had to be brought down from Baltimore by Jocasta's request. And the plan was to have the father, marry Roger and Bree, as well as Jocasta and Duncan, and two other Catholic couples, as well as perform some christenings and baptisms. Claire realizes that Jaime had actually known Roger wasn't Catholic when he saw him baptize the baby at Snaketown. He'd made a fuss because he thought if he made a fuss about Roger, then they'd be okay with the priest marrying them and having Jem baptized Catholic. Did you get that?
Kind of.
Yeah, it took me a hot second too. So Jaime thought that if he made a bigger fuss than he really was actually feeling, that
he just wants the baby baptized.
Exactly.
He's choosing his battles.
Exactly. He is willing to fake energy toward, like, make a fake stand for, or fake a whatever over Roger not being Catholic, so that when he's like, okay, well, you may not be Catholic, but, you know, okay, you can marry my daughter and not be Catholic, but she has to marry, you know, she has to be married by a priest. Well, yes, that he likes that too. But at the end of the day, what does a priest get him? A priest gets him his grandson baptized.
Who is clearly all that matters at this point.
Dudes, yes. So Jaime and Claire have a shared moment, and they remind us of their respective J and C scars.
What? That's not in the show.
I'm not talking about the show. This is the book.
I know. Ginger. Oh, my God.
You said show.
I know. I was making a joke.
Oh, stop making jokes. You're scaring me. So they have a shared moment, and they talk about, they don't talk about them. They, Diana reminds us of their shared J and C scars, which is a nice callback to, I guess,
the book when it actually happened.
I know, right? The coming wasn't near yet.
Tell me again about the coming.
Sorry. I keep skipping words. The coming war wasn't near yet, but it was coming.
I preferred it the first way.
Stop it.
But the this coming time wasn't near yet.
Well, she tried at the beginning. At it. But she tried at the beginning, but those damn soldiers.
Don't give up, Claire.
But this time, she would not leave Jaime. So she would be with him during this war. We learned that two more families will be welcomed to the Ridge. Robin McGillivray and Geordie Chisholm. There are 6 McGillivrays and 8 Chisholms. The former will be coming in the spring, and as Robin is a gunsmith, and he has a German wife, Uta, which we get a lot of Uta in this book. Jaime takes Wee Jem to go see Jocasta and ask about some coffee for breakfast, and leaves Claire alone to be able to cook. In her moment of solitude, Claire thinks of the Ridge. And a raven flies past. Of course, a raven is a bird of omen. Archie Hayes finds Claire alone. He's asking for Jaime. She says she doesn't know where he is, and she throws him a bone. She's like, your corporal said that you also wanted to talk with Campbell as well. I think you might find Jaime with him. He's over there in that direction. And Campbell's tent was about as far away from Jocasta's as you could get.
Mm-hmm.
But after a beat, Hayes turns and walks toward Jocasta's tent.
He's like, stupid.
Glass face. That had to be it. And that is chapter 1.
All right. Join us next time when we will be discussing chapter 2 entitled Loaves and Fishes.
So thank you guys so much for joining us on our first episode, our first discussion of a chapter in the Fiery Cross, the beginning of our Fiery Cross read-along.
And thank you to Dallas Crane.
Oh my gosh, the music. And we'd love to, as always, continue the conversation. So many great things. We'll have an event just for this book since we don't want any spoilers in the main area. And if you haven't joined our group yet, we'd love to have you. You can find us at outlander.pod.
Nope.
That'd be interesting. outlanderpod.com/group. Thank you guys so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.